telling it as it is. David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT.
Yesterday was Armenian Holocaust Remembrance Day. It's something that has been increasingly marked by some people in the Western world, but disappointingly, hardly anyone in the UK mentioned it at all. Not a single party political leader, as far as I'm aware, said anything about it. There were a few people across the Atlantic in the United States and Canada that did mention it, notably Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Pierre Poilievre, the head of the Conservatives in Canada. I'm not a big fan of his, but he did mention this, and also Vivek Ramaswamy. Julian Assange also mentioned it as something that we needed to remember before he was taken by the British police at the behest of the US government and put in prison. It's something that is not remarked on because certain countries, certain powers that be, don't want people to talk about it. Although we do talk about and remember other genocides that have happened in the 20th century. It's not a pleasant topic to talk about, I know, but every year there is a Holocaust Remembrance Day. It's been rebranded now the International Holocaust Remembrance Day. I guess that's to go along with the organization that set itself up that calls itself the International Holocaust Remembrance Association that has made a working definition of anti-Semitism. And if you disagree with, or if you say it's one of the things that they don't like you to say, you get called an anti-Semite. That is marked every year on the 27th of January. And of course, they talk about what everyone learns in school. Everyone learns in school that 6 million Jews died in the Second World War. That was a Holocaust. They've also added to that remembrance of other genocides around the world that have taken place since then, which are also marked on that day, happening in Darfur, in Bosnia, in Cambodia, and other places as well. Rwanda, sorry, is the one I was trying to think of that skipped my mind just briefly. My apologies for that. Those events are marked on International Holocaust Remembrance Day, but there's no mention made at all of the Armenian genocide, which started in 1915 and went on for 8 years. And in that time, 1.5 million Armenian Christians were killed as the Ottoman Empire came to its final days and fell apart. There's no mention made on that day either of the 20 million plus people who were killed at the hands of the Bolsheviks in Russia and other places in the Soviet Union, including the 7 million at least kulaks who died in the liquidation of the kulaks in the Holodomor in the 1930s. Those things are strangely left out and cancelled from being remembered on Holocaust Memorial Day. So it's important that we do remember this and what happened in Armenia. The thing is with this, it's not over. While attention in the mainstream media in the West is focused on terrible happenings in Ukraine and in Gaza, something happened on the 17th of September 2023, just 7 months ago, that has received hardly any attention from the mainstream media or Western politicians at all. That is the Armenian region of Nagorno-Karabakh, otherwise known as Artsakh, which has been an Armenian area for nearly 2,000 years. It was the place of the first Christian church, one of the first Christian churches that was established from the second century onwards. That area was invaded by Azerbaijan and ethnically cleansed, and 120,000 Armenian Christians were forced to move into another part of Armenia as Azerbaijan took it over and forced all of those people out. They haven't stopped. They are now agitating to take over another part of Armenia proper and form a land corridor between Azerbaijan main, an ex-Serbian province, and then create a highway to go between Baku and Turkey. This again would displace more Armenians in their homeland. We need to remember this, and this is something that we can speak up about and we can stop. I wonder if people are not mentioning it because it's Christians who are involved. And the Middle East, we're told, is just a Muslim area. But actually, tragically, the reality is, up until the wars in Iraq, the wars in Syria, now the war in Gaza, the ethnic cleansing of Armenia, and so on, there were many, many Christians across the Middle East. But a lot of them have moved out because of actions done by Western nations. And of course, this relates to what's happening in Palestine at the moment, which of course is again the site of some of the oldest churches in the world. The Holy Land itself, the very first churches were started in Jerusalem. With the followers of Jesus himself when he was on the earth in that area. So we can speak up now about the continuing ethnic cleansing, which is a following on from the genocide that happened in Armenia over 100 years ago. And we can speak up about the ethnic cleansing and the early part of a genocide, which we see happening in real time in Gaza. And it's not just Muslims who are affected, it's Christians too, because there are some Palestinians who are Muslim, some Palestinians who are Christian. The Israeli Defense Force has targeted Christian churches, we know, destroying buildings and killing people on the grounds of churches with horrible sniping operations. We can speak up about this. The worst thing we can do is to keep silent. And as Julian Assange tells us to do, speak up about this, because this is something that the powers that be want to keep out of our consciousness and want to silence us about. If the powers that be want to silence us, you can be sure that the right thing to do is speak up and push back against the wickedness in this world. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma Cooper is here with me now to talk about the latest in the UK news headlines. I think there's some interesting things going on today, even this morning, Gemma, aren't there? What's happening?
Well, absolutely. I mean, all eyes are on Scotland at the moment, actually. Humza Yousaf, the First Minister of Scotland and leader of the Scottish National Party, is holding a press conference as we speak. It was called for 10 o'clock. He held an emergency cabinet meeting this morning, and he's announced that the SNP is pulling out of the Bute House agreement, power sharing with the Green Party. This is in response to the reaction just a few days ago when Scotland announced it was going to review its emission targets and that net zero by 2030 was unsustainable, unachievable, and pushed everything to 2045. That didn't go down very well. Also, Scotland last week in an announcement of the reaction to the CAS review about gender clinics in the UK, the only NHS clinic, gender clinic in Scotland, announced it would be pausing puberty blockers. Those are two things that hadn't gone down particularly well with the Greens, especially the rainbow lobby of the Green Party in Scotland. But they were going to hold a vote on whether to carry on working with the SNP. But the two co-leaders were quite confident that that vote would still say, yes, we want to carry on power sharing. Today, Humza Yousaf has taken that decision out of their hands and they've accused him of political cowardice. So this is a breaking story. I'll have a lot more on this throughout the day. Also, a big story for the UK is that Labour have pledged to renationalise all the railways, most of the railways in the UK, if they get into power, which they clearly see has captured the public mood, the level of debate this story has generated. They're not in power. They just say this is what they'll do if they get into power. Lots of headlines around that. And the household cavalry horses that threw their riders and bolted through the streets of London, central London yesterday, some of them covered in blood. They're in a serious some of those horses, and it led many on social media, the striking images that came out of that incident yesterday, to make comparisons to the four horsemen of the apocalypse, to ritual, occult symbolism, all kinds of debate generated by those horses. But today, some of them in serious conditions. So that story is still ongoing as well, David.
Well, thanks, Gemma. I mean, very interesting happenings in politics today. I mean, particularly what you mentioned in Scotland. I've been following this over the last day or so, that I think the Green Party was not happy. Some people in the Green Party certainly didn't want to stay with the SNP and the coalition there, because they have backed off from net zero targets and also, as you say, backed off from some of the extreme LGBT ideology and agenda agendas, such as wanting to dose up children with puberty blockers, which in my mind is abhorrent. I mean, the Green Party there have got policies which are, you know, completely opposite to my policies in the Heritage Party. We'd look after children, and we would not try to impose this net zero climate alarmist insanity, because there's nothing wrong with carbon dioxide. But of course, the Green Party are not going to be happy with this. You know, the thing is with the Green Party, a lot of people think that they are nice and they're just about looking after trees and looking after birds and animals, when actually nothing could be further from the truth. So this is very interesting, because it looks like Hamza Yousaf has jumped the gun, and he's like jumped out of the coalition before he was pushed in a way, because who knows how the vote would have gone within the Green Party, this internal vote, as they've got a few weeks left before it happens. You know, things can change, and by the time the vote happens, there may be a majority in the Scottish Green Party that say, yeah, we want to come out of that coalition, we don't want to be with them anymore. So it looks like he's jumped before he was pushed. But the question on my mind is now, could there be a no confidence vote in the SNP, which would then lead to an early Scottish election? Has anyone been talking about that?
Not yet, but of course he's just called this press conference. So you know he's taking to the stand now, and then he'll be addressing Parliament. And obviously today is normally the First Minister's questions in Scotland. So he's combined the two. It's a significant day. He knows that everybody will be there. But no, I wonder if these are issues that will now be kind of addressed, because those are questions that many people will be asking. Mm. Well, what happens now? He only went into the power sharing agreement, or the SNP rather. Nicola Sturgeon brokered this deal, of course, because the SNP didn't have enough votes to form a majority government. So they went with the other pro-independence party, said, we'll work with you, we'll power share, gave the two Green co-leaders positions in the Scottish government, which, judging by their reactions today, they're absolutely gutted to be losing. Who wouldn't be? It's better to be inside the halls of power than outside looking in. You can at least try and affect change if you believe it can happen. I do think that it's the Rainbow Lobby that have kind of forced this. They were out on the streets last week protesting against the net zero review, as it were, and their carbon emissions, and also protesting about the puberty blockers being put on pause. You know, they didn't like that at all. And I don't know how much percentage the Rainbow Lobby and the Green Party in Scotland makes up. So you're quite right. This vote could have gone the way that they were going to pull out anyway. So it's almost like breaking up with someone, isn't it? I'll dump you before you dump me, and I'll save face, which is what it looks like. But clearly, you know, you could argue in a sense that Hamza Yousaf has kind of become a little bit more less tolerant of fringe agendas, which seem to determine globally to control the narrative. He's taken the bull by the horns today. Be interesting to see what snippets come out of the presser, which he's currently holding. But yeah, the two Green co-leaders today, they really aren't happy. They're saying it's an act of political cowardice, and they're accusing him of pandering to the SNP reactionary department and his party. I'd say probably he's probably more captured the mood of the people, who are sick of fringe agendas being shoved down their throats. That's my take on it. Anyway, that's my speculation.
It's quite a turnaround, isn't it? Because we just had a few weeks ago him introducing this terrible Hate Crime and Public Order Act, which is going to criminalize people for making jokes, you know, that someone doesn't like. They can report it to over 400 new places where you can report crimes, including universities and even sex clubs and hospitals and so on, if you feel offended by something. So he certainly up to now very much pandered to the LGBT lobby, the alphabet people, but then suddenly seems to, like, maybe is rowing back from that a bit. So I'm not sure what's going on, because I'm very suspicious of people who don't have any consistency with this. I mean, I think that's very, very important. You've got to be in politics founded on principles. You've got to know what you stand for. But he seems to be all over the place. And with this, well, what are his principles? Is he for, you know, punishing what is known as transphobia or homophobia? Or is he actually now engaging in what the LGBT crazies might call transphobic behavior?
Well, good question. It's a difficult one. I mean, all with all leaders, they never act in isolation, do they? Mm. What influences are going on behind the scenes? Who, you know, what lobby is in his ear saying, you know, this is the course of action we think you should take. You know, where's the pressure come from? As the Greens have said, pandering to reactionary elements within his own party. Well, what does that actually mean? What does that mean? You know, does that mean there would have been a confidence vote if the Greens had pulled out? That would have led to a confidence vote, you see, and he's trying to protect his position. It's difficult to know until we hear what he's actually going to say and what spin he puts on it this morning, which, you know, within the next hour, I will have an update on that in the Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn. But yeah, it's not looking good, is it? And of course, the SNP rocked by the charges last week of Peter Murrell, Nicola Sturgeon's husband, who's accused of course, embezzlement of SNP funds, you know, more than £600,000 that were supposed to go towards an independence referendum. You know, embezzlement's a serious charge, and Humza Yousaf last week said he was shocked of that. So it's not a good time for the SNP, is it, really, at all? So maybe that's why he's taken control of this. I don't know.
Maybe, but I mean, I'm no fan of them. I think they're deplorable. I think that everything they stand for is the wrong thing. And, you know, I wouldn't be happy if there was a no confidence vote and they were got rid of. And that would mean a new election in Holyrood, which would be very, very interesting. But we'll see. No one's actually made an announcement on that, but we'll see. It'll be very interesting to see your updates on this story as we go through the day. Anyway, Gemma, thank you so much for joining me here on today's News Talk TNT.
Johnny Vedmore, TNT.
It doesn't matter what you think about the Jewish people. If you don't agree with the IDF murdering women and children, then you are an anti-Semite, of course. This is an extremely dangerous game. Once upon a time, that word actually meant something quite powerful. Actually, it caused people to lose their jobs. It led to politicians losing elections. It led to people's lives being ruined, and sometimes even led to jail terms. Now, it leads to people saying, get lost. There is only a certain amount of times that you can accuse people of being something they're not, and in this situation, those times have definitely passed.
Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Councils across the country are implementing what they call climate emergencies. I'm not really sure what that actually means, but after they do this, they seem to start imposing all kinds of new policies that go along with new agendas. Now, someone who's been watching this very, very closely in Colchester is Rachel Matthews. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Hello, David.
Hi, Rachel. It's great to have you with me. Now, you started off Colchester Council Watch, and I understand you've recently changed the name of that just to Council Watch Colchester and Countrywide, because you made a video about what Colchester Council were doing, which was so good it went viral, and lots of other people around the country have heard of you now and what you're doing to hold the council to account. So, I mean, can you tell us a little bit about what you were concerned about that your council in Colchester was doing, and why you started the Council Watch that you've done?
Yes, well, initially we went along because there had been a fly-up sent round that they were thinking of making Colchester carless. So we went along to the Environment and Sustainability Panel meeting to find out what on earth was going on. And then to our horror, we found that they were planning on putting EVs everywhere. From we'd already got the electric scooters littered around the entire town or city, as they like to refer to themselves these days. And they were bringing in all these bikes as well and e-cargo, and they wanted a rapid transit bus system so that people aren't driving into town. It's all electric vehicles. And of course, we'd seen so many of these EV fires, and bearing in mind, this was a year ago before it was really that you weren't seeing them many places, but on alternative social media like Telegram, you were seeing them every single day. So we went along to warn them, look, this stuff is really dangerous. And in so doing, we started to research more and discovered not only of the fire hazard aspects, but also the making of them isn't remotely green. Extracting lithium, and then there's the cobalt with some batteries have, not all, and that's the child slave labour. And it was just the more we dug into it, the more of a minefield it was. So that's the video. Some clips went viral on Twitter and various other social media. People did sort of snippets from that meeting or several meetings, and several of us go along. It's not just me, but I'm sort of more known because I do the video presentation. So we started up Council or Colchester Council Watch channel originally so that we didn't know what was how councils run. None of us knew anything. So we started observing all of their streamed meetings to get a feel for how it worked. And then after sort of 9 months of doing this, we thought, well, really, everyone in Colchester should be understanding how the council functions and the decisions they are making on our behalf. So we thought, well, I'll just do sort of a compilation video because their meetings often go on for sort of 3 or 4 hours and no one in their right mind is going to sit through that. So I thought, we'll just do some snippets. And then before I knew it, the topics got larger than just what was happening in Colchester because there was some 5G stuff came up. So I ended up interviewing Ian Jarvis, who I'm sure many of your viewers have heard of. And then I got embroiled in sort of the farming thing and ended up interviewing Sandy Adams for the behind the scenes of why the government is being steered to basically render our farmland, wildflowers and solar farms. So the channel has ended up being so much more. So Colchester Council Watch didn't seem the appropriate name for it anymore. And as you've mentioned, lots of people have also been inspired, which was part of the reason we did it, that all up and down the country, we should be having Council Watch and everybody understanding what it is their councils do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I couldn't agree more because a lot of this agenda, which is very, very harmful to the way of life, just the normal way of things that we've gone about and have taken for granted for all of our lives, is being changed deliberately. I mean, you can call this what you like, the New World Order, the Great Reset, the leveling up, devolution, I don't know, all these kind of things, Agenda 2030, they're all related to each other. But no, I think what you've done is absolutely fantastic. But as you say, it's very, very difficult to get engaged as an ordinary person because not many people have any kind of understanding at all about what the council does, how it operates, who the people are. When I was on the London Assembly, they used to talk about this climate stuff all the time. And I was on the Environment Committee. And I went on the Environment Committee because I thought, oh, this is going to be great. I can, like, you know, help out with parks and trees and things. But it was all about imposing a climate emergency and getting people not to use cars, putting restrictions on cars and things like that. But the thing is here, I mean, do the councillors know what they're doing? I mean, do they actually genuinely believe that introducing electric vehicles is a good thing? Or have they got some alternative motive as well?
I think the vast majority genuinely believe they're doing good with it. And that is very difficult to tackle when people, because basically it's people's beliefs. So one of the things that we've done or tried to do with our speeches, we had some coaching from David Charalambos, who is from reachingpeople.net, and he made it very clear it doesn't matter how much facts and information you give people, if it's not on the map in their mind, they simply will not be able to process it. So we've gone in trying to put some additional information on their maps that, look, these EV productions aren't as green and good as you think they are. So little by little, if you keep adding more information, when you finally do come in and say it out loud, look, net zero is a load of rubbish, you've done so much preliminary work that they are more open to it. Some, not all, obviously.
Yeah, well, look, Rachel, don't go away. We're going to have a quick news break now. We're halfway through the hour, but we'll come back and talk more about this in a minute. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT.
Here's what's making news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. 18 of Donald Trump's allies have been indicted by a grand jury in Arizona for legally challenging the results of the 2020 election. The bishop stabbed in last week's alleged terrorist attack in Sydney has weighed in on the censorship war brewing in Australia. And as protests erupt across America demanding an end to the war in Gaza, demonstrators have swarmed the residence of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk. TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
There is no climate emergency. That's what I say. That's what I think anybody who is thinking would say. But climate emergencies are being declared all over the country. Now, Rachel Matthews is here talking about Colchester Council in particular. But what she's saying about Colchester would apply to any council around the country. There are 317 local councils in England, and almost all of them are following the same path as Colchester in declaring a climate emergency and then changing things and policies that happen in their area. So welcome back, Rachel. You were talking about this very, very well before the break. You know, you were just saying in the break something interesting, that most of the councillors don't even know what a climate emergency means. I mean, has anyone there explained to you exactly what that means?
Not in a clear way. We wrote to them requesting that they explain precisely what the parameters of this climate emergency are. So otherwise, how will they know when it's over? If there's no measurable, definable boundaries of this said climate emergency, you know, when will they realise that whether what they're doing is working or not? And that really stopped them. And the best they could come back with is, well, the IPCC said that we must keep the temperature below a 1.5 degree centigrade increase. And then we sort of, if people go onto our YouTube channel, there's a Dropbox resource folder, and there is a 9-month email stream backwards and forwards with me saying, well, you know, how do you know what you're doing in Colchester? Can you evidence the impact that is going to have on global temperatures? And needless to say, they can't. So by the end of the street, I mean, it's both depressing and amusing at the same time. I had a climate scientist, Ralph Ellis, read through it, and he did say I was laughing out loud with most of the stream of this conversation, because I start out very polite. And by the end of it, it's like, I really don't care what you believe. Will you please provide us some evidence? And they couldn't.
Yeah, the thing is, this is dangerous in a way, if you like. I mean, I think it is, because when they declare it, then they start doing these things, like you've said, introducing electric vehicles, then blocking off the roads with things like low traffic neighborhoods. Then they give permission for solar panels to be built all over prime agricultural land, which I think is horrendous. I mean, they call themselves green, but that's the least green thing you could do, because they're destroying the countryside. I mean, have you seen any of these other things, wind turbines, solar panels, lots of 5G towers, and also these battery electric storage systems that are now coming up? Have they been on the agenda in Colchester?
Yes, very much so. And actually, one of the first videos I made on that channel was the one on planning. And it is shocking when you see how much the councillors have their arms literally tied behind their back. You cannot turn down these planning applications. And they came up with all these really good reasons for these solar. They wanted to put a solar farm quite close to a school and near Colchester Zoo. So if that went up with the battery storage area, there was two primary schools, a little village, and depending on which direction the wind blowed, it Colchester Zoo as well. And as I'm sure everyone's aware of how toxic the fumes are from lithium battery fire. But the Secretary of State has overruled, you are not allowed to turn down a planning application for lithium battery or solar farm on the grounds of safety. You've got to view it as a neutral planning guide. And it's like, well, how can the potential of killing children and obviously all these animals in the zoo, how can you have that as a neutral consideration? So they make it very, very difficult. So what we've started doing now is going along, because food security is one of the 13 key infrastructures, critical infrastructures that they have to allow for. So what we've now requesting, and we've just started to, obviously they're breaking now because they're all trying to get re-elected. But as soon as they come back, we're going to pursue them further with, you've got to put food security on the local plan so that the planning councillors have the ability to turn solar farms down based on food security. At the moment, there's virtually no grounds that they can turn them down on.
That is astonishing. I mean, that's absolutely terrible. I didn't know that. I mean, I'm against them. And, you know, the Heritage Party, we've got a few councillors at town and parish level, and we're opposing these things where we can. But I didn't know the Secretary of State had said that. So it's essentially, you've got local government, but they're not allowed to turn down solar farms, solar panels. I mean, that's appalling. But you've also mentioned the sort of slavery aspect of these, because a lot of these electric vehicles and solar panels are actually manufactured with slave labor. I mean, is there any way that we can be sure that if you buy a solar panel from anywhere, that it isn't tainted by slave labor?
It is difficult. There's now, I don't know anything about the publication, but Ethical Consumer have done a lot of research on this, and they say it's almost impossible to buy one that hasn't had some slavery at some point in the supply chain. But they do give a list of the ones with the least amount in. Okay, but also the council have an anti-slavery policy on their website, and they are not following it, clearly, because they're just, certainly with their purchases with the EVs.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, what do we do about this? Because, you know, you've been doing this for a year or two, something, I don't know, you started 2022, 2023, so that's, you know, been going a couple of years on this. And, you know, have you changed the minds of any councillors about this? Or do we need to actually vote these people out and get in new people who will then undeclare a climate emergency, if you like, and just go back to common sense?
Well, it feels like 10 years, but actually it's only been 1 year. But basically we're going in serving a verbal notice and putting it on public record, but they have no legal obligation to do anything like that. So we've just started working with a paralegal, a lovely man called Damien Jones, who's a big fan of yours, by the way. And he's helping us actually step things up a bit so that we can actually get the more legal proceedings against them, because they aren't following their own procedures by which they are governed. So otherwise, if we carry on going like we've been going, we're as guilty of coming out with as much hot air as they are, because we're not getting anywhere. We have had an impact on some of the councillors. With the first time they voted for a climate emergency, it was unanimous with all 51. They had another just before Christmas to try and put more pressure on the government for more funding for their climate emergency, but 17 of them voted no, and they stated many of the reasons we have brought forward. They have also agreed in principle to a net zero debate, but they are proving to be rather difficult to tie them down to a date as when we'll get that debate with proper climate scientists. They can provide whoever they want, and we've got some brilliant people to come forward, and then we can have a proper debate with all of the councillors there and anyone from the surrounding area that is interested to know more. And then once we've had that debate, then we're requesting that they scrutinise that decision and really look at whether they have the evidence to have declared a climate emergency in the first place.
Indeed. Look, I mean, Rachel, I think you're doing an amazing work. And it is frustrating because these things take a long time. And, you know, I can see through things. Clearly, you can. Many of our viewers can. But, you know, I think about the whole lockdown periods. Everyone was, you know, nudged and manipulated to support that, you know, immediately. But then, you know, it's taken 3 or 4 years for people to come round. And now the majority view is it wasn't good. And the same with the injections, and then this whole transgenderism thing we've got that came out of nowhere in sort of 2015, and then that was mainstreamed. And it's only now with the CAST report 7, 8, 9 years later, after so much damage has been done, that things are turning back the other way. And now the majority view, even in the establishment, seems to be, oh my goodness, we've made a big mistake with this transgenderism. Well, I mean, I could have told them that at the beginning, because you know, chopping bits off people's bodies isn't going to help them in any way. But with this net zero, I think this is another huge, huge stronghold in people's minds that have been, it's been created. It's not real, but it's a lot of people adhere to it. So how long do you think is it going to take to actually, you know, get rid of this ideology from the public sphere and to turn people around to common sense again?
That's a difficult question to answer. I would imagine there'll just come this tipping point and all of a sudden people will get it. But a lot of the problem we have within the council is the indoctrination. And a lot of the time, it's not actually the councillors per se that are pushing this forward, although there are obviously ones that are very passionate about all net zero and everything that goes with it. But a lot of the time, it is the council officers, and they've all been on this carbon literacy training, which is quite scary. If you ever read through that, and again, it's in our Dropbox resource folder, that's just what's written down. If you actually go through the 2 days of training, they are wanting the councillors and the officers to get hold of groups, vulnerable groups, and basically convince them that it's their part to play to get everybody to go green. So they're almost creating these little groups to come around and basically tell everyone you're not green and pass that education on so that everybody, I mean, I think when Sandy Adams spoke about it, she said in what she's read, they said that you should be encouraging people to just have one child. And you've got to have the net zero diet. Well, doesn't that sound delightful? Mind you, they get information is incorrect on farming and cattle anyway, because methane is recycled in 12 years. So that really isn't a problem. And a lot of the stuff is completely false. So it's a matter of re-educating. And that's what we try and do as much as possible, rather than go in all stroppy and table thumping. We try and educate people, because if you can reach them that way, they can make their own decisions.
Absolutely. Well, you're doing a great job, Rachel, both in Colchester and around the country now. So I wish you every success in getting climate realism back onto the political agenda. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me here on today's News Talk TNT.
When I had my heart event close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym. Thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel, ordered a coffee. But while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. But then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, you know, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
My dad was a farmer. The guy was bigger than life. He wasn't someone that liked to show his emotion or liked to show when he was struggling, but we all struggle. I want to show emotion to my kids. It's something that brings me so much joy, and I want them to see me working through things, allow your kids to know that it's okay to struggle, that even dad doesn't know the answer sometimes, but we're going to figure it out together.
Whatever happened to good? It's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and it's become our automatic answer to so much.
Hey, how's things?
Good.
Your mum, your weekend?
Good, good. Is good even that good anymore? At the Selbos, we believe good deserves better. Let's reclaim its true meaning. To us, good has always been about making a difference, and good never picks or chooses who it helps. Isn't it time we all remember what good really means?
Discussing pressing issues on today's News Talk, TNT.
It's been 4 years now since the lockdown started, and then after then there were the experimental injections which were rolled out to 50 million plus people in the UK. Many people have died unnecessarily from the effects both of the lockdown and also the experimental injections. We know there are a huge number of excess deaths now this year, and there were last year as well, and this is continuing to increase, which is a great worry. Now, there is a COVID inquiry going on in London for what happened in England and Wales. There's also a Scottish COVID inquiry that is happening. And I have with me on the show Pamela Thomas, who lost her brother James during the lockdown period and who has given evidence to the Scottish COVID inquiry. Pamela, it's a great privilege to have you on the show. Welcome, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Now, great to have you. Can you tell us a bit about what happened to your brother, James, in the lockdown period?
Yeah, well, what kind of happened is he ended up really unwell. He'd been in his bed for a few days with diarrhea and dehydration. We all kind of took a bug. My brother's symptoms was kind of different from everyone else's. And eventually he was at the point where he needed some kind of medical attention. And my son had taken him along to Nine Wells Hospital in Dundee. Upon arrival, he was refused entry. He was refused any help or any support. There was like five ambulances outside with paramedics. No one would come out and help him. My son then had to call 999 from outside the hospital and ask, you know, can we get some help here? I've got my uncle in the car. I believe he's been exposed to COVID and he's needing some help. One of the nurses in the hospital had told my son that she was dealing with a teenager with a broken ankle and that she wouldn't be coming out to support my brother or help my son. Eventually, he was taken in and within a few hours, we were basically told that my brother was going to die.
What? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, how could they just make that assertion just within a few hours after he just, you know, gone to the hospital with, you know, diarrhea and things? Was he able to move and everything before he went into the hospital? He was conscious, wasn't he?
Well, he was conscious, yeah. He was conscious. But what they said as when I received his medical records, I'd apply for his medical records after he passed away due to the obviously horrific circumstances. And when I eventually got to see him and the state he was in, he was unrecognisable. They said that his oxygen was really bad on arrival and they'd taken a PCR kind of test and they said that he tested positive. Throughout it, they told me that he was single organ failure, which was his lungs for COVID.
Right.
Once I received his medical records, I actually seen that he'd got put in a trial where his signature was falsified. He wasn't able to give consent to that trial. And the study investigator, I believe, was responsible for falsifying that document to put him in the trial. That was a zero antibiotic trial. He had MRSA, ventilator-associated pneumonia. He had stenomatosis metafolia. He had haemophilosis influenza, all these different kind of infections that he had that we were never made aware of. They administered him a thing called toxamolabab, which suppresses your immune system, kind of opens you up to all these infections. And what's important with that trial and the signature that was obtained or falsified, should I say, was it meant that it was a zero antibiotic trial, a randomised control trial, which meant my brother didn't get antibiotics. So by the time anybody done anything or they were looking to do anything or these infections were found, it was already too late. My brother had gained over 4 stone in weight the last few days of his life. There was no attempts to drain any of this fluid from him. I was called and told that he died of a cardiac arrest. This wasn't put on his death certificate, nor was any of the other infections, which were all killer infections. Our family tried to obtain a private post-mortem and we were refused any support at all. Later on, just November last year, the Health Improvement Scotland got back to me with an upheld complaint stating that we should have been directed and supported by the local Crown Office as well as Health Improvement Scotland to obtain and pay for a private post-mortem to find out the cause of my brother's death.
It sounds like everything that they did was the opposite of what they should have done. I mean, putting him on an experimental drug, there was Toxilimazab.
Nobody's given me a reason as to why he was given that. Why would you give someone who's already vulnerable in the hospital and someone who had a penicillin allergy a medication that was potentially going to lower his immune system, open the door basically for everything to attack him? Some of these infections, I don't know if you've heard of the Mully Maine, the Queen Elizabeth scandal, where Mully Maine, she was a little girl, I think she was in there and she was undergoing treatment for cancer or something like that. She actually had one of these infections, the stenomatosis. Now there's a criminal investigation in the Queen Elizabeth for that very infection, which killed her. The Crown Office here won't look into that for what killed my brother. I believe that's something that you catch through drains and tap water and stuff like that. I don't believe it's like passed from person to person. It's to do with the water systems within the hospital. So that's in my brother's records. He was positive for that on a multiple occasions, and there's no investigation.
How long was he in the hospital for? Because you said in the last few days of his life, he gained 4 stone in weight, which is a huge amount to gain in weight in a few days. I mean, that's you know, something severely wrong for that to happen. But how long was he there for?
So he went in on the Friday, the 17th of September, and he passed away on Tuesday. It was the 5th of October, but it was the weekend prior to his death. On the Saturday, one of the consultants had carried out a bronchoscopy, some kind of procedure. Now, it was after that that I was getting to do video calls, WhatsApp calls. So I was, obviously my brother was on a ventilator at this point and he was out of it. But every day after the first 6 days, when nobody told me that I was allowed to call or video him or anything like that, when eventually they said that I could, I would do these calls every night. And other than being on a ventilator, there wasn't anything that I was concerned about, you know, to look at, because my son would often come on with me, play some music, try and talk about football scores and stuff like that. But the weekend that procedure was carried out, I'd recognised that there's something not quite right here. He's looking different. He's swelling. He's looking red. And I highlighted that to them. And the next day when I tried to get my call, they actually put it right off until like 5 to 12 at night. And I repeatedly kept calling and calling and calling. I had to tell my son to go to his bed for school in the morning. And then when I got to see my brother, that's when I seen that he was like a balloon. He was so red, so swollen. He looked like his face was going to pop. I said, "What's wrong with my brother? What have you gave him something? Has he took an allergic reaction? What's going on here?" And then I never got to see him again until he died. And he was unrecognisable. The funeral directors, actually, they had a cause for concern with what was on his death certificate, which was only SARS-CoV-2. But every door that I chapped, I was turned away. There was nobody that was prepared to support me. I went to the police, been to the police on a number of occasions, I've been to Crown Office, and every time, and which is coming out of the inquiry loud and clear, is that not only me, but everybody is coming out with falsified documents, consent illegally obtained, you know, and nobody nobody's interested. None of our mainstream media is focusing on any of the family stories. They're more focusing on situations with the politicians and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? There's a few people on Twitter, X, that are highlighting these very specific things that all the families are saying, but the mainstream media won't pick that up.
Well, I mean, obviously the politicians have, you know, ultimate responsibility for making the decisions to declare a COVID emergency and put in place all of these protocols and so on. But it's also the people that are doing it. You know, it's the doctors, whoever falsified the evidence, whoever signed in your brother's name but falsified his signature and then gave him this experimental drug and treatments, you know, that didn't, you know, it seems to me from what you're saying, that killed him. They must be responsible, because this breaks the Nuremberg Code. This breaks all the principles of informed consent. It breaks the Hippocratic Oath. I mean, are these things coming out in the inquiry, the Scottish COVID inquiry you're giving evidence to, or do you think this is just a whitewash?
I believe it's a whitewash. I was instructing the inquiry that I was going to the police with these concerns, and I was telling the inquiry directly, the KC Stuart Gale, I was saying to him directly, Stuart, Mr. Gale, you know, I'm going to the police with these concerns because I've been advised that it's a criminal matter. I says, and the police are instructing me to come back to the inquiry with it. He says, the police are informing you wrong. It's not an inquiry's remit to investigate any criminality. That is the police's job. I says, I'm aware of that, Mr. Gale, but I'm highlighting to you, this is what the police are doing. I have numerous emails from the police telling me that take it to the inquiry, and I believe that that's what everybody else has been told, but it's not an inquiry's remit. Nobody's investigating the criminality here.
So it's like the police are saying, you know, it's the inquiry's job, and the inquiry's saying it's the police's job, and you're being passed from one person to the other, and no one's taking responsibility.
Exactly, yeah.
But I mean, you know, say the inquiry does get all, you know, your story, the stories from many other families that are reporting similar things, that there has been fraudulence here. I mean, this is, yeah, to me, to my mind, this is blatant criminality. What will the inquiry do with that? I mean, surely will they then go to the police and say, all this has happened, now investigate it? Is that the understanding, or is it just going to be put in a cupboard somewhere?
That's a good question. That's exactly what I would like to know. We've got lawyers, we've got lords, we've got KCs that have all this evidence being put in front of them. At what point do they can do something about it, or do they just continue to turn a blind eye?
Yeah. You also, I think in one of the sessions I saw you speaking, people were mentioning WhatsApp messages between ministers and so on. I mean, have they come before the inquiry at all? Is there any evidence in there that's useful?
Well, we don't actually get to see what the messages are. That's our legal teams that all get access to kind of that. But a lot of it, what they're saying is, you know, they've deleted their messages. And yeah. They've deleted them, and they knew there was going to be an inquiry.
Wow. It's a dreadful thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, in England, you've got a separate COVID inquiry there, and it seems the messages from Matt Hancock and Boris Johnson, the main players, have all been given to the inquiry, and they've actually been publicised here. But this Scotland there seems to be a different thing going on. It was fully independent, in a way, from what was happening in England and Wales. Were there different people there? Was it a completely different system in Scotland to what happened in England and Wales, that people there are, you know, independent? Did they make these decisions independently?
Yeah, well, it's looking like it. It's looking like it. And we're certainly not getting to see. We've seen everything from Matt Hancock and Boris Johnson and all the rest of them. We're not getting to see. There's wee bits that we're getting to see. But on a grand scale, no, they're just as... It's blanket, they've been deleted.
Yeah. So what's going to happen now? I mean, how long is this inquiry going to go on for? And does it have an end date?
I have no idea. I know that there was supposed to, recently there was supposed to be an investigation or inquiry into the vaccinations and things like that. Mm. But I believe that's been put off till 2025, I think, which is absolutely horrific given what's going on there. So that's that, another, again, is a big concern.
Another 2 years down the line. Just quickly, I mean, we got a minute or so left. What do you think they should have done? I mean, how should your brother have been treated when he went into the hospital? What should they have done differently, in your opinion?
Well, I think when my brother went into the hospital, it was 2021, so they had quite a while. It wasn't the first lockdown, do you know what I mean? So they knew what was working, what wasn't working. They knew that ventilators were not working. But they seem to be still pushing them on people, and especially the unvaccinated, I believe, to get the numbers up to scare the public. And my brother was unvaccinated, and I believe that is what may have led to him being, you know, used as a lab rat while in that hospital.
It seems like it, doesn't it? Now we know that the ventilators weren't actually going to do anything constructive, and there was these the protocol there. There's a Lenco protocol, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc, which would have been far more effective than the experimental treatment that your brother James has given, in my opinion. Look, we come to the end of the show now. Pamela, thank you so much for joining me and talking about your experiences. I wish you very well with your evidence on the Scottish inquiry. And thanks for joining me today on today's News Talk, TNT.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Goodbye.
Great to have you. Thanks.